From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Today on the program, we feature a conversation with Rick Rasmussen, administrator and investigator for the Police Civilian Review Board of Salt Lake City. Rasmussen tells us about the thinking behind independent civilian review of the police.
Our board has information that's generated by someone other than a police officer. And ultimately, that's where civilian oversight of law enforcement originated from, was the concern that officers won't investigate their co-workers in a fair, unbiased way. Whether or not that perception is accurate, the perception exists in large segments of society that blue wouldn't investigate blue.
That conversation, your local news, and a look at the Move to Amend ballot survey in Salt Lake City, just ahead on The Rundown. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later on the show, we'll have a conversation with Rick Rasmussen, who is the administrator and investigator for the Police Civilian Review Board here in Salt Lake City. But first up, we have these headlines. Utah Governor Gary Herbert on Tuesday named freshman legislator Spencer Cox as his choice to succeed Greg Bell as the state's lieutenant governor. Herbert announced his pick Tuesday afternoon at a news conference at the state capitol.
I want to have somebody who had absolute integrity and had demonstrated that throughout their lifetime in various different opportunities and venues and situations. I want to have somebody who had been involved in the private sector, that understood that what it takes to create jobs, the government's role is one of maybe more limited, and an empowerment of the private sector to create the wealth, which in turn creates the jobs.
Representative Cox, a Republican, is a telecommunications executive and former mayor of the town of Fairview. Cox was born and raised in Fairview, graduated from Snow College and Utah State University, and received a law degree from the Washington and Lee Law School in Virginia. Previously, Cox practiced law in Salt Lake City. He says that his and Governor Gary Herbert's aims for the state of Utah are one and the same.
He is passionate about jobs, about education, about energy production, and about using Utah-based solutions to solve the problems that this country faces. Now, I know you all watch the news. You know what's happening in our nation's capital. It's a travesty to see the lack of leadership that we see at a national level. I'm proud of the leadership that we have here in this state.
Governor Gary Herbert's pick must be confirmed by the state Senate before taking office. Herbert picked Greg Bell for the role in 2009 when Herbert, serving as lieutenant governor, became the state's top executive, as then-Governor John Huntsman resigned to serve as U.S. ambassador to China. Bell announced in September that he was stepping down to return to the private sector to save money for retirement. A non-binding poll of Salt Lake City residents rejects the idea that corporations should have the ability to contribute unlimited amounts of money towards political campaign outcomes. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has this story.
Are corporations people? According to Salt Lake City, the answer is no. By 88%, Salt Lake City residents voted in favor of an opinion question that asked people if they agreed with the statement, "Only human beings, not corporations, are endowed with constitutional rights," and "Money is not speech, and therefore regulating political contributions and spending is not equivalent to limiting political speech." Kyle LaMalfa, chair of the Salt Lake City Council, announced the results Tuesday.
The next step tonight will be to discuss the meaning of this poll, whether we want to take some tangible action as a city, or whether we just want to adopt the results as official opinion.
The opinion poll does not create any new laws or make any other binding changes. The question was mailed to 80,000 Salt Lake voters last month, and almost 20,000 ballots were returned. That's a 24% return rate, which was more people than voted in the 2011 mayoral election. The cost was $98,000, but LaMalfa says this ballot was important as a way to better involve residents in the issues that face Salt Lake City's future.
I think this is part of a greater effort on the part of the council and the city to engage people in public participation. I think we sent a statement that said regular people have a right to a more formal opinion.
The opinion question came about because of a petition initiative that was started by Move to Amend Salt Lake City, a local branch of a national movement. The ultimate goal of the movement is to amend the U.S. Constitution as a rebuttal to a recent Supreme Court ruling, Citizens United, which held that the First Amendment of the Constitution prevents the government from restricting political expenditures by corporations, unions, and other groups. Giles Larson is with Move to Amend Salt Lake.
The voters have spoken loud and clearly that democracy is not for sale. That's really what it boils down to, that they don't want their democracy to be sold to the highest bidder, and they don't want corporations to be used as political tools. We're fine with them being used as economic tools, but when they're allowed to participate in the political system, they'll dominate.
Larson says 389 municipal and 16 state resolutions have passed nationwide since the Citizens United case was first decided in 2010.
Wherever this resolution appears on the ballot, people come out and overwhelmingly support it. So 2-1 or 60-40, this is a very popular resolution regardless of partisan affiliation even.
Larson says they are trying to build local support and will eventually move on to building federal support. Constitutional amendments require a 2/3 vote by both houses of Congress and ratification by 3/4 of the states. While that effort seems a long way off, Councilman Luke Garrett says the ordinance created by the City Council in order to poll the residents of Salt Lake City could be useful much sooner.
It's being used in one way now by Move to Amend. I could see it being used by different citizen groups for different reasons in the future. I could see the city or the City Council using this type of opinion gathering in our policymaking. We might want to line up 5 questions or 3 questions that we think are very serious, that we want people's kind of quasi-official opinion on, that would really inform the way we chose to do one thing or another.
The City Council will meet tonight to discuss the results of the poll. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
The special counsel assisting the state House investigation of Utah Attorney General John Swallow has cost about $250,000 so far, the investigative committee's chair said on Tuesday. Representative Jim Dunnigan, a Taylorsville Republican, said after the committee's meeting on Tuesday that the bill from the Washington, D.C.-based law firm Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer & Feld covers August and September. Earlier on Tuesday, Special Counsel Stephen Reich gave the committee a brief update on the probe. Over the past 3 weeks, investigators have interviewed more than 60 witnesses who have generally been very cooperative, according to Reich. He said the interviews will help the committee determine what documents they would like to review and who else they might speak to as they proceed. And those are our top headlines for the day. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. Stay tuned. And now on The Rundown, we turn to a discussion with Rick Rasmussen, Police Civilian Review Board investigator and administrator here in Salt Lake City. Rasmussen is charged with dealing with specific complaints against Salt Lake City police officers by members of the community and works in conjunction with a volunteer citizen review board. So Salt Lake just hosted the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, or NACOL, conference. You are Salt Lake's Civilian Review Board investigator, and you attended the conference. What was the conference all about?
It's a gathering of individuals across the country who are engaged in overseeing law enforcement at the municipal and county levels.
And what do they do at the conference? I mean, are they exchanging information, talking about how it works in different cities, different towns?
Right. We were the host city this year, and so the conference has a bunch of different workshops that have seminars available for various individuals who may need help in a specific area, say forensic interpretation of digital media or interviewing or records review. All of these different classes are offered, and the attendees select which ones they believe they need the most help with or would like to broaden their horizon. We also discuss best practices within the profession across the country, and we also all recognize that trends that are happening somewhere else are generally going to happen everywhere. And so those are the types of discussions that are happening.
And attendees are all I mean, there's probably some from police forces, but generally it's civilian oversight people like yourself. Is that?
That's correct. The vast majority are those type of people. And then there are city officials from various municipalities across the country who are interested in establishing their own.
So I thought we could use this as a jumping off point to talk about civilian oversight of the police in general. What is your role and how do you carry out your investigations here in Salt Lake?
Well, Salt Lake uses a civilian review board model. There are 14 board members, 2 per council district. They're appointed by the council, and then they go through some rather extensive training, and then they're able to sit and opine on the various cases that come in front of them. From that 14 on any specific case, 5 are randomly selected to hear the case, at which time I present the case to them and they offer their opinion, which is then forwarded to the police department for the chief's actions. So if a case were to come forward and the board believed that the officer was out of policy, they would make a finding of sustained. If they believed he was within policy, they'll make a finding of unfounded or exonerated. So,
and those are all there. The board is all volunteer board. Is that correct?
That's right. And they're very dedicated citizens who are active in the community and represent their particular areas of the city.
And are you the only employee of this agency division?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm the sole full-time city employee dedicated to this.
When a complaint comes through and you find that it is sustained, that the 5 randomly selected people say, all right, yes, this is something that the police should look at, it goes to the police department and then they begin their own internal investigation?
No, the investigations are done in conjunction with internal affairs. So as and that way the witnesses aren't called twice, the officer isn't called twice. So the investigations are done concurrently and but independently. So IA will generate their own investigative report, which they'll forward to the chief, and the Civilian Review Board will do the same.
And so how many complaints a year do you receive?
Well, it varies. I would say we probably see somewhere in excess when you lump everything in, because we look at everything from, you know, officer-involved car accidents to pursuits to citizen complaints or internal complaints. We get a lot of internal complaints where a supervisor or another officer has made a complaint about a coworker. All told, I would guess somewhere in the neighborhood of 240 to 250.
Okay, a year. How many of those actually end up being referred to ongoing investigation or internal affairs and the police department?
They're all examined by the police department. Even the most minor is examined, and they're all reviewed by us also. I look at them, but some of them are very de minimis. Rudeness complaints, for instance. If the officer doesn't have a history of rudeness complaints, generally these stem from traffic stops or something like that where the officer, you know, the citizen believes the officer was rude or inconsiderate in that contact. The board has decided that if there are no extenuating circumstances that we're going to leave that in the police's hands under the theory that our police department is very reflective of our community, very responsive to their chief, and very responsive to the mayor. So the community standards of what is acceptable and not acceptable is oftentimes best managed at the lowest level possible without an additional full-blown investigation by us. So and generally the results have been great. We haven't had any follow-up complaints saying, I still think he's rude. Well, he may have been, but oftentimes that's the end of that. But a more serious complaint will generate a full-blown investigation that will go all the way through up to and including the panel setting and the issuing of a report.
If a law has been broken, what happens in that case? Is there, are charges filed?
Right. When you have a law broken or an allegation of a law being broken, and the most common one that, that's most prevalent is an officer-involved shooting. Did the officer use deadly force in conjunction, in accordance with state law? Then in addition to IA's review, the Civilian Review Board's review, then the district attorney's office also reviews it. But these investigations will run at their own rates and independently of each other. So it may take a specific element of that, three-headed monster. A head or two may get ahead of the other one.
Right.
Because the Civilian Review Board's looking for issues of policy violation, if an issue is initially presented as a policy violation, but then as the investigation unfolds, it becomes apparent that this may be a criminal, then it would be referred at that time to the proper authorities to investigate independently. So you could have 3 investigations stemming from the same incident.
And I remember that when a number of cases were dismissed in West Valley City, that there was a call for greater civilian oversight there, and that they hadn't maybe developed the same process of civilian oversight that we have in Salt Lake City. Well,
I think what you're asking is the West Valley model as independent as the Salt Lake City model is? And that's something that the community needs to decide on their own. I certainly won't advocate one way or the other. I will simply state that the advantages of our model are independence. The fact that our board has information that's generated by someone other than a police officer. And ultimately, that's where civilian oversight of law enforcement originated from, was the concern that officers won't investigate their coworkers in a fair, unbiased way. And whether or not that perception is accurate, the perception exists in large segments of society across this nation, certainly not limited to Salt Lake City or West Valley. It's across the nation. And so that's how this organization itself and this type of field came into being. It was this perception by citizens that Blue wouldn't investigate Blue, and probably based on failures that happened elsewhere in the country. That has not been my experience here, but nonetheless, it is a healthy additional check and balance on our police officers. You know, policing is a very difficult job, and then reviewing allegations of misconduct is difficult again, because we're investigating our brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, who have been alleged to have mistreated our brothers and sisters and sons and daughters. So it's a very tough situation that you find yourself in when you're reviewing the actions of third parties and you weren't present during those actions. So that's how it all came about, and that's why the model that Salt Lake City uses is so effective, because the citizenry knows there's a second set of eyes with no ties to the police department that's going to review each of these allegations.
And does the information that is gathered, let's say that a witness to something or somebody who has an allegation against a member of the police force, I mean, are they guaranteed any kind of privacy, or is it I'm just wondering if there's ever the fear of retaliation from not police on the whole, but maybe a specific officer?
Sure. I'm sure that people worry about that. I've not seen that. But that threat is always possible. You have a person in authority that has lawful domination over you as an individual, and that can be a scary situation. I know that the process is set up both by the police department and by my office to ensure that that doesn't happen. And an officer that would attempt to intimidate or harass or influence a witness, I just can't fathom where a set of circumstances would come up like that where they wouldn't be found in violation of policy and probably in great jeopardy of losing their jobs.
You know, on the other side, on the flip side of that, I'm wondering if this process is ever used by people to make allegations that that are intended to defame police officers.
Well, I can't speak on what a person's intent are. I can clearly state that the majority of the complaints that we review end up being unfounded or baseless. I've heard in many investigations where an individual would say, well, if you'll just drop the charges against me, I won't make the complaint against you. And that smacks of some sort of extortion or some attempt to get out from under underlying charges. But why people do that on those limited bases where that's occurred is a mystery to me.
That's interesting, though, the idea that I'm going to use this as a negotiating tool.
Right.
I'd like to ask Rick about your specific background and how you got into civilian oversight.
Well, I'm a retired FBI agent, and I was stationed here in Salt Lake City when the job came open, and I was contacted by a third party who asked me if I'd be interested in the mayor and his staff interviewed me, and after going through that, they offered me the job, and I've been here, I guess, 5.5 years now.
The board members who help with these investigations, how do they get involved? Do they just sign up or express an interest?
They do. They volunteer, and we have two per council district. They're termed out. You can serve two terms. Like all boards and commissions in Salt Lake City, they're limited by terms. They turn over with some regularity, but they're all concerned citizens. And they come from all sorts of different walks of life. We're very diverse. Our board is extremely diverse. We have educators, lawyers, stay-at-home individuals, retirees, and we have a good cross-section of all represented parties, I believe, within the city.
So you have a sort of cross-section of society on the board that helps to investigate or review your investigations of the Salt Lake City Police. Is that accurate?
I think one of the issues that you're talking around is the reason our board works so effectively is because of the citizens that sit on the board. The fact that they represent the average person in the city, that they bring their different thought processes, their different opinions, and yet when they sit in deliberation on these cases, they divorce themselves from their personal thoughts and feelings, and concentrate on what the facts show before they render a decision, because this is a very weighty position that these citizens basically will have a huge impact on what type of actions the police department would take against an officer if he were found to be in violation of policy.
So they take their responsibility very seriously.
They do.
So let's say that there's somebody out there who, for whatever reason, is listening and thinks, wow, this is something I could have used or I could use. Or maybe they just want to be aware of it. How do people contact, you know, you or make a complaint? Or if they're just curious to learn more, how can they do that?
Well, the city website has a link to our board. It has all the bios of the individuals who are involved. You also can call. You can call my office. You can call the mayor's office. Most people tend to call the mayor's office, and then it's referred to me. I've had a couple of those in the last couple of days, and so that's the way it goes. If they want to be involved, calls for citizens who are interested in joining the board and sitting on the board, we're always looking for them as our folks rotate in and out off the boards. And it's a fairly simple process to get the paperwork started and get them in front of the city council and the rest of the training they have to undergo and then become a full board member. It's a valuable community service.
Wow. You know, this is kind of a silly question, but how's your relationship with the police here? I imagine that when that rare, you know, bad apple does emerge, you're the kind of the last person that they would like to see show up because you are, you know, you represent this investigative process. I mean, maybe it's not that bad because you do dismiss so many cases.
Well, we don't dismiss. We find what the facts are and we arrive at a rational decision. I'm a firm believer that reasonable people will arrive at the same conclusion if presented with all the evidence. If everybody sees the evidence, it doesn't matter if you're from IA, the district attorney's office, or the Salt Lake City Civilian Review Board, you're going to arrive at the same decision. This patently was outside of policy or it was within. And so that kind of conflict, that adversarial conflict that maybe has been sensationalized on TV, I'm sure there's angst. I mean, no one wants a second father looking over their shoulder, checking up on them, making sure they're doing the right thing. And I get that. I wouldn't want that either. But I think the members of the department recognize that this is a necessary check and balance and that we do it professionally. We do it unbiased, that they're not going to be held to a different standard than anyone else would be held to, other than the fact that they're law enforcement officers who have to comply with not only the law, but their policies and procedures. So that's a long answer to say, I think my working relationship with the police department is extremely professional and by and large is friendly.
Friendly and a necessary part of the oversight process in general.
Right. It's, you know, it's a very necessary part. I mean, I can recall a case where my board felt the officer acted within policy while the police department felt that he worked outside of policy, which that just goes to show you the level that the board members are seeking the truth, where they're willing to say, yeah, that maybe wasn't the smartest thing, but that's not a policy violation. Wherein the department felt that, well, yeah, but that was silly. That is a policy violation. So it's a very good check and balance. And I think by and large, the rank and file within the police department have nothing to fear and don't exhibit that. All of our board members do ride-alongs with the police department, and so I think that it's a healthy, adversarial, but collegial relationship.
Wonderful. Rick Rasmussen, Civilian Review Board investigator and administrator, thanks for coming in and speaking with us today.
Thank you.
You can hear a full version of this conversation and all of the interviews we feature here on the program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're tuned in to The Rundown here on KCPW. We'll be right back. And that's our show for today. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for a conversation about electric vehicle policy with Vicki Bennett, Director of the Office of Sustainability for Salt Lake City. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in today. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.